So we just began the fourth parak of Sanhedrin, and that's on Daf Lamed Beis, Kevinyan Lev. I'll give you again a little bit of an overview of what we did yesterday. The Mishnah is comparing and contrasting the laws of the actual case, the regulations that apply to testimony and to the judges and to the voting and to the various expressions of l'chayev or l'zake, who's allowed to come forward and make that claim. And the Mishnah is comparing and contrasting dine nefashos and dine momenos. It's interesting that the Mishnah begins with dine momenos. That's the opening two lines in the Mishnah in the parak. Although certainly you would think that dine nefashos would be more appropriate opening, because it's much more severe, much more serious capital cases. But nevertheless, this Mishnah is a hemshech of the last Mishnah, and Rebbe always starts the new parak by picking up where he left off. So he left off with dine momenos, and he picks up with dine momenos. Now the first halacha here, which is a halacha in edus, and specifically in investigating, interrogating the edus, that's common to both dine momenos and dine nefashos, and that's called drisha v'chakira. And the Torah says v'darashta v'chakarta heitev. The Torah admonishes and mandates that the judges be very careful to interrogate the edim, make sure nochon, make sure that the two witnesses, or as many witnesses as there are perfectly reconciled. And then there's something called bidikos, that the Mishnah here does not mention bidikos. Bidikos are kind of secondary issues, whereas chakiros, drishos and chakiros are primary. Primary means they address the question of time and place, what's called makom and zman, and the edim have to be, number one, they have to know the answers to all those questions. Let's say in the case of chakira, if the edim say, I don't remember where it happened, I don't remember when it happened, they can't pinpoint the location or the time, then we basically throw out the edus. Because those chakiras about makom and zman are absolutely critical, and we've mentioned that many occasions in the past. Drishos are also very critical, like to be dorish means how much did he borrow from him, what was the value, and in the case of a murder, let's say in a capital case, would be what murder weapon did he use. You know, those would be very critical, and those are drishos. Then we have something called bidikos, which, as I said before, is secondary. You want to know what color shirt he wore, where was he sitting, or was he sitting or standing, were the mos or the alvo was tied up in some sort of a bag or a pocketbook, and what was the color of the pocketbook. All these things are secondary, and they're not critical. And in the case of bidikos, if he cannot answer the question whether or not the let's say the rodef or the rotzeach was wearing black, or the boel in the case of a Gili Arayis case, which is also a capital case, were they black or were they white? So he could say any adea. He doesn't have to know the answer. But when it comes to drishos and chakiros, which are primary, those are absolutely critical. And in the past, we've mentioned that in dini momenos, they pretty much Chazal did away with bidikos. Bidikos are these secondary questions that if you keep pressing the edim, you'll probably at some point find some sort of a discrepancy between the two edim. And in dine momenos, we don't want to do that. We want to make sure the malva has a sense of security. Otherwise, he's not going to lend his money. He wants to know that he can get testimony. And if you're going to investigate and interrogate the edim with bidikos after bidikos, until finally one aid says, well, I think he wore a black hat, and the other said he wore a white hat, you know, at the end of the day, the malva is going to be left holding the bag, so to speak. He has no edus. So that's one of the things that we want to get to later on as we go along. Now, I want to mention here the Ran, Rabbeinu Nissim, here in the beginning of this perek. He says that b'mamon kol mashu zchus lazehu chov lechavero. In other words, it's very difficult to talk about the concept called zchus and chova in dini mamonis. I'll explain why. In dinei nefashos, you have one person who's being accused of a crime. It happens to be a serious crime, and it's a capital crime. So either you're gonna come forward lizchus and try to exonerate him or acquit him, or you have something lechov in which you're coming to condemn him. So those concepts of zchus and chova are very, very relevant and appropriate for dinei nefashos. In contrast, when you come to dinei mamonos, he points out that what's a zchus for one of the two litigants is a chova for the other, and vice versa. So it's a little bit more complicated to speak about zchus and chova with regard to monetary law, monetary cases. Everybody follow so far? However, he says that there is something called a zchus. That terminology is appropriate in dini mamonos, based on the halacha of hamotzi mechaveru olaf harai, meaning the halacha of dini mamonos really hinges on who's in possession and who's trying to sue to take something out of someone's possession. So when we use the word zchus with regard relative to dini mamonos, what we really mean is bischuso shel hamachzik. The person who is now in possession, we call it the nitba, in English we call it the defendant. So the word zchus means that we try to, so to speak, take him off the hook, so to speak. In other words, we want to save him from having to pay, whether it be a loan, whether it be compensation for damages, whatever it might be. So that's called the zchus. Chova, again, relates to the same individual who's the muchzak. And the word chova means that we have testimony or logical arguments in favor of the tovea at the expense lechovaso shel nitba. So again, the Ran's point is that even though the concepts and the terminology of chova and zchus are much more appropriate and smooth with regard to dini nefashos, when you talk about a capital crime and we're accusing a criminal, so it's either, you know, a testimony or evidence l'schus to save him and acquit him, or the opposite. But even in dini mamonos, we can apply these terms, but we can apply them consistently with regard to the nitba meaning the defendant who's muchzak, and the word chov means to force him to pay up, and the word schus means to save him from having to pay up. And he says the following. Nevertheless, he says, Ein ze adif. He says, with regard to mamonos, there's no adifus, there's no special preference for either zchus or chova. Zchus or chova are just descriptive terms, but they don't indicate any preference or any push or any agenda. In the case of dini nefashos, then there's always going to be a push towards zchus. As we go through this Mishnah, we'll be sensitive to that, as opposed to chova. So in dini mamonos, you know, we're really neutral here. You know, we don't know if the malv is right and the lov has to pay back his loan. If the lov is right, he already paid back his loan, or whatever the case may be. And therefore, zchus and chova are really just descriptive terms. They mean a heck of a lot more when it comes to a criminal case, because in criminal cases, we really want to know whether or not there's a zchus or a chova, and whether we're going to put someone to death. Now, one of the issues that we're going to have to face as we go through this Mishnah and the sugya that follows is what's called Mishpat Echad Yelachem. The Torah says that there should be one Mishpat, one standard of justice and judgment in all cases. And time after time, the Shas derives from that pasuk an equation, an analogy between Dini Mamonis and Dini Nefashos. So, for example, the requirement that we have Drisha and Chakir and Edim, which is the first item on our agenda today in the Mishnah, and that's derived from the pasuk Vidarashta V'Chakarta Heitev, that pasuk appears in the context of capital cases. It does not appear in the context of moment of Dine Mamonos. For example, in Parshas Mishpatim, which we just read 2 days ago, 3 days ago, in there you won't find the pasuk Vidarashta V'Chakarta Heitev, but we have an overall equation or analogy between Dini Nefashos and Dini Mamonos that's derived from Mishpat Echad Yelachem. So that's great news for the opening line in the Mishnah, but the whole Mishnah, the balance of the Mishnah after this opening line, is going to be a deviation. And we're going to answer the question in the Mishnah, Ma Bein Dini Momenus L'Dini Nefashos, what's the difference between the two? So we open up by saying, Echad Dini Momenus V'Echad Dini Nefashos, B'Drisha V'Chakir Shenemar Mishpat Echad Yilachem. That even though the Pasuk V'Darashta V'Chakata Heitev, which appears in Dvarim Perek Yud Gimel in the context of Dini Nefashos, we can apply that to Dini Momenus by virtue of Mishpat Echad Yilachem. But nevertheless, the Mishnah goes on to say, Ad Kan, up until this point, it's Mishpat Echad Yielachem. But now, Ma Ben Dini Momenos, L'Dine Nefashos. So at this point, we sort of, we're at a, you know, a crossroads, in a sense, we part ways, and there are going to be many, many differences here, many contrasts between the two, between monetary and criminal cases, and capital cases. And the Tana, in a sense, is sort of begging the question. He's, you know, it's like we have a phrase: you take the horse up to the water, but now the horse has to drink. The Tana is telling us Mishpat Echad Yilchem, but, and these are the exceptions to the rule. And there are so many exceptions to the rule that you wonder why is it that this rule is so limited in its scope, and we only apply it to Drisha V'Chakira. That's the common denominator between Dini Momenus and Dini Nefashos. But beyond that, you know, we have all these distinctions. And in each one of the distinctions, we're going to have to try to find some sort of rationale and some sort of indication that the Torah has rules that apply to Dini Nefashos that will not apply to Dini Momenos. Okay. So let's get to the first contrast between the two, and that is the composition of the Bez, the Dini Momenos Bishlosha. In the case of Dini Momenos, we had a whole sugya at the beginning of Sanhedrin, Adav Bez Amit Bez, based on Parshas Mishpatim, where the Torah repeats the word Elohim three times to teach me that you need three judges. So the word Elohim in that context, which is in Shmos Parakov Bez, that's a reference to a human judge, and it repeats itself thrice. We need three judges, that's all we need. But Dini Nefashos require Bezdin of Esrim Vishlosha, of 23 judges, which is otherwise known as Sanhedrin Aktana. Next, the second contrast is that Dini Momenos Poschim Bein L'Schus U'Bein L'Chova. Again, when we say Schus and Chova, as we mentioned before in the name of the Ran, we're talking about the focus is on the Nitva, on the defendant. L'Schus means to alleviate him from any payment. L'Chova would mean that he, the Nitva, has been found guilty, if I could use that term. I don't know the word guilty, is probably not a good word, but he's found wanting, and he has to pay. So it doesn't matter where you begin with the Dayanim. Now, what we're referring to is something called Masa Umatan. Don, would you want me to write down on the board Masa Umatan? Are you familiar with that term?
Heard of it.
Okay, maybe I should write that down, because you know, when we talk about Dini Momenos and Dini Nefashos, a lot of what we discuss is about Masa Umatan, which in one word in English would be deliberation. Now if you translate this literally, Masa means somebody puts forth something, Umatan, and he gives it back, so to speak. So there's what you call a give and take. So the Mishnah tells us that with regard to the halachas of Masa Umatan, here's where there's a fundamental difference, a contrast between Dini Momenos and Dini Nefashos. In Dini Momenos, there's no specific sequence, there's no order. You know, like, you know, somebody wants to get up, one of the judges, and he says, well, I have a claim or an argument or evidence that weighs in favor of the Tovea against the Nitva, which is called Lechova. And there's another Dayan who comes up and he says, well, give me a chance to talk, you know, give me the platform, just like reminds me of the Knesset, you know, give me the microphone, because I have something to say in favor of the Nitva, that's called the Schuz. So which of these two comes first? No difference. And there's no specific order, And therefore the Mishnah says, Poschin bein l'schusu bein l'chova. There may be other rules. You know, maybe we'll start with somebody who's a little bit more senior on the bench, or whatever rules we'll come up with. But certainly, the factor of schus achova, whether you're in favor of the nitba or you're against the nitba, is totally irrelevant. Because as we said before, there is no agenda in dini momenos l'schus. In contrast, when we get to dini momenos poschin l'schus, we have an agenda to try to save and acquit the accused, and that's called l'schus. And the Gemara later on is going to derive this from a pasuk, v'itzilu ha'eda, that the eda represents not just the community but the bezdin, and the bezdin has a responsibility to try hitzilu, if they can, to try to save the accused from the crime that he's being accused. So we want to already begin the judgment, the, in this case the deliberation amongst the judges, with what's called l'schus. Okay, now I want to share with you a note here that ein poschin l'chova. The Mishnah seems to be repeating itself. There's something very, at least at the face of it, superfluous about this Mishnah. He just finished telling you that b'dinei nefashos poschin l'schus means we call upon first and foremost that judge who says, I have something to say that could exonerate the accused. And then the Mishnah goes on and says, v'ein poschin l'chova, but if we have another judge on the bench and he wants to say something that would condemn the accused, then he's not going to be the first one to speak. So do you notice the double language here in the Mishnah? Wouldn't it have been sufficient for the Mishnah just to say, b'dini nefashos poschin l'schus? You know, you have these two judges. This one is l'schus, l'schova. Give first dibs. Give the first platform to the one who's l'schus. Why do you have to go ahead and repeat yourself, which seems superfluous and unnecessary, and say, ain't poschin l'chova? So he says the following, Yesh lomar, di'af tibetini momenos al pirov lo shayach schus v'chova, shekol shu l'schus l'zeu chova l'chavero. Again, as we said before, in the name of the Ran, these terms of schus and chova are really, technically, if you want to be precise about it, are inapplicable to dini momenos, because what you can call it is schus, yeah, it's a schus for him, but it's a chova for him, and vice versa. Mikolakom, nevertheless, we do find in dini momenos schus and chova, in the literal sense. How can we find schus and chova in a monetary case? So this is a discussion about a parsha called Shor HaNiskal. What happens in the case of Shor HaNiskal? The Shor is being accused of, let's say, killing a man. And here the Baal HaShor is, the owner of the Shor is sort of like, is here representing his Shor, so to speak. Meaning he would really prefer if they exonerate his shor. Shor is worth a lot of money. It's a big bull, So here, there's only one person who, in monetary terms, stands to either lose or gain. So on the one hand, it's not dini nefashos, because we're not killing a human being. No one's being accused of a capital crime. So really, in effect, we have a dini momenos case here. But you could argue that since there's only one person who, in a sense, the case is really relevant to one human being, that's the owner of the shor, so now we could apply the principles of schus and chova. Because again, there's no other litigant who is on the other side of the fence. Do you follow what I mean? In a malvin alova case, there's the malvin, there's the lova, there's the tove and the nitva, but here, the issue is, do we have ample evidence to kill the shor? Because the shor did whatever it did. So it's schus l'chova, it's really for the Baal HaShor, and only for the Baal HaShor. There's no one kenegdo. So therefore, if the Mishnah would have just said the following, B'dini momenos poschin afilu lechova, and b'dini nefashos poschin l'schus. Again, that would have been a shorter, abbreviated version of the Mishnah, but we would have come to a mistaken conclusion. We could have come to the conclusion that this rule, that dini momenos, you begin even lechova, that only applies in a case where it's a chova for him and it's schus for him. But in a case of a shor niskal, which is pure chova, because there's no one who gains over here, it's all a loss on behalf of the Baal HaShor. So therefore, in this case where there's no chova and schus, because shor niskal is pure chova, is therefore we wouldn't have a rule of ein poschim lechova. Why? Because since on the one hand we're dealing with a chefetz shel mamon, we're dealing with something that has value, correct? And there's only one person who stands to either gain or lose. So the Mishnah had to go out of its way to say ein poschin lechova to include the case of shor niskal. So let me read it to you inside. Avol shor niskal shachova yichova gemura v'ein bo schus li'acher. So we would have said in such a case that maybe it doesn't matter which way, you know, still we're dealing with dini moments, start whichever, but nevertheless the Mishnah goes out of its way to say ein poschin l'chova. So the extra words in the Mishnah, which seem superfluous, unnecessary, of ein poschin l'chova, are coming to tell me something about shor niskal. So the Mishnah starts by saying that in dini momenos it's bein l'schus u'bein l'chova, which means that it wouldn't have been enough for the Mishnah to say that b'dini momenos poschin afilu l'chova. That would seem to apply even to the case of shor niskal. But instead the Mishnah uses a longer language of bein l'schus bein l'chova to tell you that we're talking about a schus for one person, which is a chova for another person. That's the language of the Mishnah, bein l'schus bein l'chova. But in a case of a chova gemura, where there's no schus for anyone, that has to be included on the dini nefashos. And we only know that because the Mishnah went ahead and said, v'ein poschin l'chova, the extra words. So basically, according to what we're saying, I'm just going to sort of summarize it. This is something from the Kosa Yeshua. So he's trying to say that the Mishnah, in this entire section, from the beginning to the end, is trying to answer the following question: How would you classify shor niskal? So the Mishnah makes a very clear difference between dini momenos and dini nefashos. And that's going to set the stage for an answer to that question: where do we put shor niskal? So dini momenos is l'schus l'chova, which means it's schus for such a person and a chova for the other person. Do you follow? Because they're two litigants. In dini nefashos, the Mishnah goes out of its way to say, well, here we have to be posach b'schus. Now we have the case of shor niskal. Where does that fit in? On the one hand, it's dini momenos; it's only relevant to the owner and the possession of the shor. But on the other hand, here it doesn't fit into the category of l'schus l'chova, that it's a schus for one person and a chova for the other. It's only one person. So that's why the Mishnah, when it got to dini nefashos, it added an extra term, ein poschin l'chova. And that's in order to include the case of shor niskal.
I apologize. I know we covered this previously, but why is, in the case of the shor, there's only one?
Because there's no one else who's claiming the shor. I mean, there's only one owner of the shor, and the question is whether the shor is going to be put to death.
Right.
So there's only one person, so to speak, who's going to lose this mamon by destroying the shor. You know, in other cases, the question is, do I take mamon out of one pocket?
Because the other guy doesn't gain anything.
Correct.
There's no one to gain. It's only someone to lose.
Right, right. Okay. We're not talking about, you know, the mammon aspect. Again, you know, you might talk about, but right now we're having a judgment over the shor, whether the shor should be put to death. Mm-hmm. Okay. So that's what the Mishnah went ahead and said, ein poskin l'chova, that if somebody wants to get up and say, well, I know that this shor did such and such, and therefore it should be put to death, we stone it, he's not going to get first dibs.
Is this issue covered in the Gemara?
I don't know. I can't tell you because this is my first experience in the parak.
Okay.
You know, since I was in a fetal stage.
Even then.
Dini, here's the second contrast. How much of a majority do you need amongst the court in order to issue a verdict? So in Dini Mamonis, all you need is one. That's called Matim al pi echad. So you have two judges who say Chayav, and one judge says Zakai, or the other way around, and that's enough, a majority of one. And that's Bein L'Schus, Bein L'Chova. But in the case of Dini Nefashos, although there is a halach of Matin al pi echad, there is a possibility of handing down a verdict based on a majority of one. However, that's only l'schus. So, for example, if there are 23 judges on the bench and 12 say that he's acquitted, to acquit him, and 11 say that he's to be condemned, so you have a majority of one, and that's sufficient to acquit the accused. And again, this all fits into that pattern that I mentioned to you before, that we have an agenda of Itzilua Eda to try to save the accused. So one majority of one in this case is sufficient. Oh, but now we want to know l'chova, if we're going to condemn the accused. And here the Mishnah says, al pishnayim l'chova. You have to have a majority of two in order to condemn the accused. Now that's not so simple, because if you're talking about 23 judges, let's say you have 13 judges who say that he's to be condemned, he's guilty as accused, and you have 10 judges who say that we can acquit him, then you have a majority of 3 judges. But if you're going to break it down to, instead of 13 and 10, you're going to break it down to 11, 12 and 11, so then you have a majority of only one. It doesn't seem to be a middle ground. I think, isn't this what we call the law of the excluded middle? You could either have a majority of one or a majority of three. Now, I understand you exclude the one and you accept a majority of three, but the Mishnah is saying that you could accept a majority of two. How do you... Just the mathematics doesn't seem to work out. So let me just read to you this note over here. He says that the Mishnah is based on a pasuk, which again we read just, what is it, today's Monday, so I guess you could say about 2 days ago, right, 48 hours ago, I don't know. The pasuk says, Lotia achrei rabim l'rois, which usually means that we don't follow the majority to wrong somebody. And here in this case, to wrong somebody means to find somebody guilty. And the Torah is saying that you don't rely on rov, which is very strange, because the next part of the pasuk says Akre Rabim Lahatos, that we rely on Rov. So how do we reconcile this? And the Gemara insists that pasuk of Lotia Akre Rabim Laros is not referring to Dini Mominos, to monetary cases, which you and I would have assumed it was, but rather it's referring to a Dini Nefashos case, and that's the case of Shor HaNiskal that we mentioned earlier, because Shor HaNiskal in this context has the status of a Dini Nefashos, even though that's very shocking to us. But maybe, you know, the Torah is in favor of animal rights, you know, so you're about to kill the Shor and you need a Beis Din of 23 judges to condemn the Shor to be stoned. And in that context, the Torah says, Lo tiach rabim l'ros. And again, we're going to have to see the sugya later on in Daf Lamed Vav. The Gemara is going to talk about how we know that this pasuk Lo tiach rabim l'ros is referring to Shor HaNiskal, which is a capital case. On. Now, where is the question that I was raised? Oh, maybe it's this one. Okay. Eich yitochen, How is it possible? Sheyirbu hamachayven al mezakim shnayim. How could it be that you would have a majority of two that are mechayven? Harayeshnam esrim u'shlosha dayonim. Im asorim mezakim v'shlosha sor mechayven. You have 13 who say he's chayv and 10 who say he's potur, he's zakai. Is then you have a ribuy of shlosha. V'im achadasar mezakim u'shneim asor mechayven. Is lo rabu mechayv ela echad. So we only have a majority of one. So the Gemara, back on Daf Yud Zayin Amud Aleph, which reminds me it's time for Chazorah, right? The Gemara back there quotes Rabbi Avo, and if you take a look on Daf Yud Zayin, he says, Medubar kigon shachadasar mezakin, achadasar mechayvim. There was a stalemate, echad omer eni yodeh. So the 23rd judge says, I don't know. So he recuses himself. So you're left with 11 versus 11. So you have now 22 judges on the court. Yitzarech l'osif od shnei dayonim. So we have to add two. So if we add two, and we're left with basically 22 judges on the court, on the bench, right? Because the 23rd judge has dropped out. So you have 22 plus 2 is 24. So if you could have 24, then you could have, let's see, you could have 13 and 11. Is that correct? 13 and 11. So that would be a case where you had a majority of two. Now, that sugya is a little bit more complicated because it seems that even the one judge who said any odeya, it's not exactly that he's off the bench entirely. I mean, there may be a point to which he could participate in the deliberations. I mean, again, you have to know about, again, Masu Matan, but we'll leave that for another occasion. That's more complicated. So again, let's just summarize. With regard to Eidus and Drisha V'Chakira, we have an absolute equation, Mishpat Echad Yilchem, between Momonos and Nefashos. With regard to two distinctions that we've had so far, one in terms of the Masa Umatan, I mean the procedure and how you begin, and another in terms of the actual vote and how you make the decision, we have a contrast between Mammon and Nefashos. In terms of how you begin, in the case of Mammon, you can begin either L'schus or Chova. In the case of Nefashos, you have to begin L'schus. In terms of how you decide the case, in Dini Momonos, it's always going to be a majority of one. Whether it's L'schus or L'chov is irrelevant. In the case of Dini Fashos, you can use a majority of one L'schus, but L'chov you need a majority of two, and that's derived from the Pasuk of Siachri Rabim L'Ros. Next, number three. The Dini Momonos. One second. Okay, now the Mishnah wants to know what happens if Beis Din finds out after they handed down the decision that they had made an error. There was an error in judgment. And the question is, do they nullify their original decision? So, B'dinei Momonos, Machzirin Bein L'Schus and Bein L'Chov. If new evidence comes in, and it doesn't matter whether it's in favor of the Tovea or in favor of the Nitta, in all cases, then we have halacha machzir. Machzir means that we nullify the original decision, and we may very well be convinced now that we have to issue another decision, which Emir Tzeshed will be more correct. You would have assumed that the same halacha should apply to Dini Nefashos, but it doesn't. Because in Dini Nefashos, machzir l'schus v'yein machzir l'chov. Again, this is the same principle that we mentioned before, that we really have an agenda to acquit the accused, save some blood, if you know what I mean. And therefore, if somebody comes up with new evidence, l'schus, after we've already condemned him, that's valid. And then we're going to nullify the decision if the evidence is reliable. However, ein machzir l'chova, if we already let the accused off the hook and we've decided to vindicate him, then we don't go back with new evidence and retry the case. Again, if somebody could do the research for me, maybe you could Google it. There's something in Latin, which Lahavdil, the Goyim also have something about that. That we don't bring back someone who is already saved. You know, he was already acquitted.
Double jeopardy.
Yeah, I thought it was jeopardy. Something in Latin before, yeah. No, as I seem to recall from my youth.
It may be a word in Latin, but
yeah. Next, now we're up to number four. This is the fourth contrast between Dine Mominus and Dine Nefashis. Now here we're going to discuss what I call the apprentices. What do I mean by apprentice? There are Talmidim, there are students who are in the courtroom, but they're not judges. And they play a double role. One is they're learning, and it's a process of education. What we call observing, you know, the Israelis call it stage. I guess that's probably an English word. Have you ever heard of that? When you do stage, you know, so for example, like in my son's case, I mean, this is true for any physician. So he'll go with a whole group of medical students, of internists, what's it called when they're in that advanced stage? They finish
residents.
Yeah, they're residents, and he'll take them around. And they'll learn a little bit more about clinical medicine. So here we're not talking about clinical medicine. We're talking about judgment. But these Talmidim, now the Talmidim play another role, and this is a lot more sensitive. And here we're going to find the distinction between Dini Mominos and Dini Fashos. They can come up with their own ideas. You know, they saw something that they think the judges passed over. So hakol malabdim b'dini mominus, hakol malabdim susu chova. In other words, any one of these apprentices, you know, any of these stagiaires, as they call them here, who thinks he has a comment in either direction, whether it is to make the defendant pay or to exonerate him from payment, they will actually, in a very respectable way, though, they will point out that they have an idea. They have a new approach. You know, the Gemara says in Brachos that the most fascinating and challenging area of Torah knowledge that can develop your mind is Dini Mominos. And this is like an example of them, because the complexity of Dini Mominos is such that it could be the Talmidim, even though they don't have the clinical experience that the Dayanim have, but nevertheless, they're very sharp, and it's very fresh in their minds. You know, the various rules and laws and nuances of the halacha with regard to dine mominos. So I told you many times that my mechutin has a kolel of over 100 young men that are in a program for studying dine mominos, choshe mishpa, to get dayanut, and it's a minimum of 10 years. Minimum of 10 years. Most 15 years. Reminds me of Dr. Chorsky's Kohl, the Harvard Kohl, we used to call it. You know, if you want to get a PhD from Dr. Chorsky, I'm sure, you know, I don't know how many years he spent. I know somebody who has waited 50 years. I don't know. But anyway, so this is something that the stagiaires, you know, since they're so involved, in Yiddish we call it a reingetan, you know, they're so involved in the and fresh on the nuances of laws, then they have a right to make a statement and try to point out and reveal something that would give a new approach, a new kivun. But when it comes to Dine Nefashos, we're very eager to hear what the students have to say. Malamid l'schus, if they say, well, you know, I think there's an argument here or a twist that could exonerate the accused. But ein hakol malamdim l'chova, meaning only the dayanim are authorized to say something l'chova in front of the court in the course of the deliberations. But if one of the talmidim says yesh li lilmad alav chova, then halacha is, and this is going to be a mishnah later on in daf mem, mishaskin oso. We literally shut him up. We don't allow him to speak anything. Ein shomin l'chova. That reminds me of the famous story, you know, in the Rav Shir, you know, somebody who wanted to make a comment by quoting a Rosh Hashiva from another yeshiva, it was not acceptable. Because the Rav wanted to think on his own. So I remember one of the guys raised his hand and he said, "Rebbe, but Rav Aaron said," and he thought he meant Rav Aaron Kotler from Lakewood. He says, "Don't listen, you listen to me." He said, "Rebbe, I meant your brother Rav Aaron." "Oh, what did he say?" So he had this Talmud who's saying, "Oh, I have something to say here." So he opens up Lechovitz, "Shut him up, we're not interested." He says, what do you have to say? So Bedini Maman is Hamalamed Chova Melamed Schus. Okay, now we have another distinction. This is number 5, I think, on our list. We have to calculate the numbers here. And in Dini Momenos, once the Dayan, let me start with Dini Nefashos. It's a little easier. So in Dini Nefashos, you can't start on one track and then switch tracks. Let's say, for example, you started to be Melamed Chova, correct? Just one second, I'm sorry. The other way around. You started to be Melamed Schus, right? So you got up in front of the court, the 23 judges, and you represent schus, and you say, "Well, you know what? How could he be guilty? You know, the murder weapon was not powerful enough to kill him," or whatever svara you come up with. Now, as the deliberation develops, that same judge changed his mind, and he says, "You know what? I think I have reason to believe that he's guilty as accused." Can't do so. Once you took the approach of schus, you have a big Zion on your sweatshirt, you can't put a ches on it. You can't come lechova. It only works the other way around. If you started lechova, and then all of a sudden you say, "Wait a minute, you know what? There's new evidence that came in, or new thoughts and new halachas and new principles. I want to now change my tune and be mezakeh," that he can do. Again, it always goes in favor of acquitting the accused. But in Dine Momenos, we couldn't care less where you started in this deliberation, whether you started Lechova, now you want to switch to Schus, you started the Schus and you want to switch to Lechova, carte blanche. The next contrast, can the Beis Din issue its final verdict at night? Here's again a distinction. The Dine Momenos, although the deliberation takes place during the daytime by Yom, that's called Masu Maton, as we wrote on the board here, but Gomer Balayla, if it spills into the night, they can make a final decision and stand up to vote at night. But Bedini Nefashos, you have to issue the verdict by Yom. Done in by Yom, the Gomer Balayla. So if the deliberation extends into the night, then we're going to have to close the case for now and reopen it the next morning. And this based on a pasuk in Bamidbar, it says Vahoka Osam Lashem Neged Hashemesh. And the word Vahoka, the Gemara is going to tell us on Daf Lamed Daled, is a reference to the final decision. That final decision has to be Neged Hashemesh, which means during the daytime. So in Dine Momenos, you can actually have Dine Momenos at night, as long as there was Haskalah by day. It's almost as if, you know, you began the day, you already put your foot on the base, so to speak. You have a foot on the base, and now you're free to give the decision even at night. And this is all based on two psukim in the Torah. One pasuk says, and this is in Parshas Mishpatim, it says, "V'shaftu es ha'am b'chol eis." And that implies that the judgment could be whether it is by day or by night. Another pasuk, and this is in Dvarim Perek Chafal, says, "B'yom hanchilo es bonav." And since it says b'yom, it's mashmein donim el b'yom. So the Gemara later on is going to say, "Haketza, how do we reconcile these two seemingly contradictory verses, Yom l'tchilas adin, v'layla l'gmar adin?" That when it says, "Biyom," it's referring to Tchilas Hadin. You cannot start a judgment in monetary law at night. You can only start during the day. But when it says B'chaleis, it means that once you started by day, you can give a final verdict at night. Now he quotes a Yad Ramah. The Yad Ramah says, Rak kigon zeb mutar b'layla, v'maso matan lo. So he wants to be medayik in the Lashon of the Shas. The Gemara says, Gemar din b'layla. And the Yad Ramah interprets that to mean that only the verdict was handed down at night. But when it says Yom l'tchilas din, the tchilas din includes the masumata. So basically 99% of what you've done in this judgment has taken place by day. The last 1%, the makabe patish, when they stand up and take a vote and hand down the verdict, that could take place at night. That's the sheet of the Yad Ramah. But the Meiri is of the opinion that im hiskimu b'neim b'yom u'b'layla somach l'gmar din rotzim lachzor v'lasos matzu matan mutar. He says that although they should come to a general consensus by day, such that at night they just have to issue the Gemar Din, but nevertheless, if at some point before they get to the Gemar Din, they get the sense that maybe we should reopen the deliberations, according to the Meiri, they're allowed to do that at night. Not like the Yad Ramah, who says that the only thing that's permissible at night is Gemar Din, but not Masumat, and the Miri will say, although ideally they should shoot for the following, that the Masumaton should complete itself by day, but nevertheless, if they decide that it's nighttime, but we still want to do a reevaluation and deliberate more, they're allowed to do that at night. Whereas the Yad Ramah seems to assume that there's no Masumat at night at all. Now, Rabosai, I would submit to you, and please disagree with me if you think I'm wrong, that the reason why we're quoting all these psukim is because these are rigid halachas. When I say rigid, what I mean is these are absolute regulations, and they derive from psukim. When you derive something from psukim, you don't ask the question, well, I'm not comfortable with it, it doesn't make sense to me. It's Ashatosin Lefnehem. You know, this is the way the Torah. And please disagree with me, because I don't see why Laila is inferior to day. You could have said that maybe there's more clarity of thought during the day. I don't know. I'm not impressed
just
by
to
that.
Give him a chance. My
mind works best at night. I don't know. That's not really true, but I'm just saying it, you know.
Just to give him a chance to think it over one more.
Well, no, that's going to be in Dine Nefashos, so we're going to want to give him overnight to think it over. Right. But in Dine Mamonos, it's just like a separate halacha here that, according to the Miri, well, you know, you could have Masamat at night, and then the Yad Ramah says, no, only the Gemara Din is at night, but there's no Masamat at night. You know, it's hard for me to, I don't know if there's such a verb, to psychologicalize this machlokas. I made up a verb. It doesn't seem to me, like, for example, today we have lights. You know, you could walk into an ulam, you know, that's well lit at night, and you could hardly know the difference between day and night. In Horah, for example, of what's called Horas Noshim, you know, you have a question about seeing the color on a bad. So although l'chatchila we try to do it to sunlight, but the poskim say if you're in a pressing situation, there's no sunlight, then if you have good lighting, you could pass it. Again, you have to know from experience that you're
no pasuk for that.
That's what I'm saying. That's why I think this whole business that we're learning is all about psukim. I don't know. You know, again, you could come up with, you know, if you're giving a drush on Shabbos before Musaf, you can come up with all sorts of psychological explanations. You know, if a man has more propensity of thinking well at day and night, you can say whatever you want, and you can quote Freud, and I don't care which psychologist is your favorite psychologist. But I don't believe for 1 minute that that's what we're learning here. I think we're learning like hardcore halachas. You know, these are rules and regulations. That's what I think.
Maybe it's physiological. Maybe You've been sitting there since 8 in the morning judging. It's a capital case, remember?
No, no, it's not.
So far, we're on monetary cases.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That's a mistake. I didn't
realize.
So we'll get to capital cases in just a minute. But just to get through back. So we have machlokas and monetary cases between the Ad Ramah and the Meir. The Ad Ramah says, basically, you as a dayan have come to your decision by day. You didn't get a chance to, you know, to what we call a amida l'minyan, to take the vote. That you could do at night and issue the gemara din at night. But no masa l'hatan at night. And the Meir says, I don't know, if you need further deliberations, you haven't, but you started by day, finish it at night. To me, these are, again, I'm just telling you, Berzon, I'm not trying to prejudice your mind, but to me, these are hardcore halachas. You know, these are laws that call them procedural requirements. Yeah, every country, every legal system has certain procedural requirements. And this is the way the Torah sees it. I don't know what is there any law in do you know of any secular system where there's no such thing as judgment at night? Is there such a thing?
No, that's just normal that you don't do things.
Correct, but I'm saying, is there some sort of absolute rule that night is totally excluded?
Not that I know. It's just a question of working hours. That's all.
In the Knesset in Israel, are there any laws about day versus night? You know, when the Knesset passes laws,
in the Knesset they're all night. Sometimes
so they go through the night. I assume it's in any country like that.
Also,
yeah.
In America also,
So could you imagine that you have a case that comes to the Supreme Court of the United States? It's a case that could impact on the entire country in terms of the sociology of the country, etc., etc. And you can say, well, no. You got to hand the decision down by day.
I don't know.
Is there such a thing?
I don't know. The Supreme Court.
The Supreme Court, in the case of where someone's about to be executed or something like that, the Supreme Court will step in. Yeah. They may not go along with it. They may say, no, let him be executed. But
I'm just asking, is there a differentiating day and night? I don't know. Is there any rules that say...
As far as I know, there's no rule.
Yeah.
I think it's just... See,
the halacha...
The judge says, I'm sorry, 5 o'clock and go home.
Right. But I'm just saying that the halacha is working with divine law over here.
Here the Ram is saying, it's a question of the deliberation continuing into the night. Right. That neither one of them is saying that the decision can't be handed down.
Correct. That we have in our Mishnah, the decision can hand be down at night. That's in monetary. Well, now we're about to start the discussion about capital cases.
The only thing I could think of, and again, it, like you said, it just may be in the pesukim, is an offshoot of what's in the monetary cases, right? And not to give them more chance to think about it overnight, but the ones that maybe if they're arguing all day, you know, it's a long day, and they're not going to get any further than they already got. So stop and let's start again tomorrow. Once they've got a conviction, fine. But if they're after 7, 8, 9, 10 hours of arguing, let it go for a bit. Sleep on.
By the way, the Marshal, who lived about 5 centuries ago, his last name was Luria, he says that this halach that we're learning in our Mishnah, that in monetary cases, hiskil bayom is gomer balayla, that's only b'di'evet. Even that's not ideal. If all things are equal, Bezdin should try to, you know, time it in such a way that they finish even the Gemara Din by day. Now we get to Dine Nefashos. Done in Bayom. Just 1 sec, I lost my place. Okay, here it is. In Dine Nefashos, Gomrim Bo Bayom Lischus Ubiyom Shali Achrov Lechova. But let's see if we can decipher this kind of mystery over here. He says the following. They began on a certain day, we're talking about a capital crime, and the decision is l'schus. They came to the decision... No, I'm sorry, you know what? I skipped. I apologize. Let's go back. I skipped to... Dini nefashos, done in bayom, v'gomer bayom. In other words, that the Gemar Din has to take place by day. There's no such thing in capital law as handing down a decision at night. And that stands in stark contrast with Dine Momonos. And as we said before, this is based on a pasuk Kineged HaShevesh. Okay. Now we go on. Dine Momonos Gomrim Bo Bayom Bein L'Schus Ubein L'Chova. So in other words, in Dine Momonos, there's no need to make a decision on a different day, to push off the decision till tomorrow. We started today, we can finish today. So what it means is that in Dine Momonos, there's no such thing as Linas Hadin, right? Let's write that down. Linas Hadin. And that Don, is what you were saying before, let's think about it overnight. There's no such requirement in any case in Momonos, whether it's L'schus or L'chova. You know, let's say we came to the conclusion that Shimon is found, you know, guilty, has to pay damages to Reuven, $1,000, he borrowed money, whatever it might be. There's no need at all, no requirement to say to the judges, you know, let's think about it overnight. And that's called Gomrim Bo Bayom. Now we come to a definite decision on that very day, Bein L'Schus Ubein L'Chova. Whether it's this way or that way, we can immediately pass in the din, and there's no Linas Laila. The Arama takes this even a step further. He says that it's Asur. We're not even allowed to do Linas Din. Let's say the judges want to say, hey, you know what? Maybe you want to think about it. No. You started the din, there was a decision, there was a vote, we do not postpone the final verdict. The Meiri is much more liberal again, and he says that in Dine Momonos, if they decide that even though they have enough evidence to come to a decision and hand out a verdict by day, in Hiskimu Rubam, if most of the judges on the court decide that they want to wait until tomorrow, then even though they don't have to do so, but they're allowed to do so, Vimrotzim Mutar Lahalin Esadin. So again, if you want to, again, if you were writing this down in your notebook, you write the following, that according to the Yad Ramah, Halon Esadin is absolutely prohibited. We're going to see in the Fush, it's just the elder, it's Minah Kotza L'Kotza. There, you must require Halon Esadin under certain circumstances. But in Dini Momonos, says the Yad Ramah, there's no heter whatsoever for Halon Esadin. The Meiri, on the other hand, is of the opinion that if the majority of the dayanim, or the judges on the court, they decide, let's give it a night, let's sleep on it, they're allowed to do so. Now we get to Dine Nefashos. Gomrim Bo Bayom, when, under what circumstances, do the dayanim hand down a decision today, without delay, no Alon HaSadin? That's L'Schus, which means that if the Dayanim came to the decision, most of the judges, that he's acquitted, then we hand out the decision post-Kinos of a Holechlo. You know, we give him his Psak and send him on his merry way. However, let's say they started the deliberations today, and they couldn't find much, you know, they couldn't find any meaty evidence here to acquit the accused. That's all the evidence seems to be pushing L'Chova. So in such a case, there's Halonas Hadin. They must give it some more time, because maybe they'll come up with some new logic that will be to vindicate the accused. That's called, in the Lashon Hashem, Belayla Yimtzalo Schus. Maybe they'll come up with some schus. However, if they didn't come up with any schus, then Biyom Shaliachrov, on the next day, let's say today is Monday, so on Tuesday, L'Chova, they'll decide L'Chova. Now, if that be the case, then every single capital case has to allow, so to speak, a two-day period for judgment. But why? Because in event that we're hard-pressed to find any schus, we're going to have to do what's called alonas ad-din. So we need a two-day period of judgment. And not only that, we're going to need two consecutive days. Lefichach, therefore, ain't done him lo ber of Shabbos, but lo ber of Yontif. There's no capital judgment in a way that makes it impossible to have 2 days consecutive to come to a decision in a capital case. For example, if you start an Erev Shabbos, we have no yeshivas bezdin on Shabbos. Same thing is with Yontif. So therefore, what's going to happen if they find no schus on Friday, Erev Yontif? They're going to have to postpone it for 1 day because you need Alonis Ad-Din in such a case, but you won't be able to achieve Alonis Ad-Din. Even though you might say, well, we'll wait till Sunday, you know, to hand down the verdict. No, no, no. We're not going to do such a thing. Now, here we have to talk about the Isur Shabbos. Why is it that there's no judgment on Shabbos? That has to do with a violation of Shabbos. Now, I don't want to get into this right now. That's for a separate discussion, exactly why judgment entails a violation of Shabbos. But in any event, we have a halacha that din, meaning judgment, eino doches haShabbos. Even though you might say, well, there's a mitzvah to judge. And by the way, that mitzvah applies not just in the case of dini mamonos, tzedek tzedek tirdov, but applies equally to dini nefashos. And even if it means condemning a criminal to death, that is obligatory. That's not just some sort of a luxury, a license. This is a mandatory thing. So for the sake of that mandatory fulfillment of putting the accused to death if you find him guilty, we might say, let's override the Shabbos. No, no, no. Our Mishnah says we do not override the Shabbos for the sake of condemning a person to death, even though condemning a criminal to death, as odd as it sounds to your ears, but it's a mitzvah. But that mitzvah could not override the Shabbos. Therefore, they're going to have to wait and postpone until the day after Shabbos, until Sunday, or the day after Yontif. And that we can't do. That's called Inui Hadid. Now here I would use psychological terms. Imagine the person and what he's going through when he's locked up in a jail and he's waiting for his final verdict. That's a painful experience. That goes without saying. So therefore, also lanos es adin, this is called inui adin. It's very interesting. We have something called halonas adin, which gives the judges an opportunity to think over their decision overnight. And then we have the opposite. We have something called inui adin, when we postpone judgment, and that's a violation, because the criminal who is now being accused of a capital crime is going through all the angst, all the anxiety, because he's waiting to see what's going to happen with his life, if he'll have a life. So we're going to lock him up over Shabbos. Why do we have to lock him up over Shabbos? Because we need Halonas Ad-Din. We started the judgment on Friday, and we cannot complete the judgment on Shabbos. That would be docha. That would be to violate the Shabbos. So there's going to be an Inui Ad-Din. When he has to wait a full 2 days from the opening of his case until he finally gets a decision, that's called Inui Ad-Din. Alright, we'll stop here. I didn't realize how late it was.
Ayin Yud Nun Vav Yud?
Yeah, Ayin Yud Nun Vav Yud. Inui Ad-Din. So we're almost finished with the Mishnah, but not quite. Yeah,
so what happens if the trial goes on, it starts at the proper time, not before Shabbat?
Right. That's not called Inui Ad-Din. Inui Ad-Din means when they pretty much have a decision, but there's halacha that they can't give a decision on the same day, and the Torah requires that they hand down the final verdict another day, and they sleep on it overnight, but they have to hand down the decision the very next day. If they have to postpone that decision, once they've already completed the deliberations, that's called Inui Ad-Din.
Right, I'm just thinking of a case where a trial goes on for 5, 6, 7 days, 2 weeks. So you'd have to take account of that every week.